You're listening to 101.9 WDET. I'm Nick Austin here, and I'm joined now by an artist who a lot of you guys know, especially out in the hip-hop scene in Detroit, but one of those here who has not only made a name for himself in our hometown, but also nationally working on lots of wonderful music and great producers, and I could get into a long laundry list of it, but since he has a new album out for 2023, I'm just going to talk about it with him, because he's in studio with me right now. I'm talking about Black Milk, man.
Yes, how are you doing? I'm good. I'm great. Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, I'm happy to have you here too, because I'd been meaning to talk to you for a long time, and finally we've been able to link up and do it. But of course, if you're going to drop a new album, that's the time to
Perfect timing, man.
So we are going to get into the new album, but before I do that, I want to take it back to the beginning, because while I know a lot of people here are going to be familiar with you, some people it might be a little bit of a new time for them, or they might have heard you in passing on some things. Yeah. So let's start from the beginning, since you're here from Detroit. How'd you get your start in music?
Music kind of always been around me, you know what I'm saying, in my environment. Growing up in like a household with two parents that was music lovers, and especially growing up in church and just that whole environment, you know how that was, especially in the 80s and the 90s. Like, it was crazy. But so yeah, man, it was always a part of my environment. But then when I became interested in it, that was more so being around like older cousins and, you know, seeing them, you know, do their like thing in terms of hip hop recording, production, and having their own little setup in the basement. And being around that like every weekend kind of like what made me catch the bug to want to try myself, you know what I'm saying, and get interested in it. So yeah, and that's when, you know, start writing, rapping, and eventually getting into producing.
The hip-hop scene in Detroit's got a lot of foundational people in it, including folks like Slum Village, you're talking about, Jay Dilla, and that whole scene. Yeah. Is that how you got your initial start into actually trying to make a go of it?
Yeah, man. Like, I was already somewhat doing my thing, you know, as a producer, as a rapper, record my own music with the group that I was in at the time. And, like, you know how it is on a local scene, passing around your music, just trying to get known. So we had like a mutual friend that went out on tour, and my cousin that went out on tour with Slum. They had like a beat CD at that time, when, you know, burn a whole bunch of beats on the CD. And they had some of my beats out there on the road with Slum. They was roadies and was playing some stuff. And that's how Slum came across my music. So when they got back to Detroit, they was interested in me coming up to the studio, playing more music. This was around the time Dilla was leaving the group. So they was looking for like production from different people around the city. So yeah, I was one of those people that like end up doing some production for their Trinity album, and then eventually just became like their in-house producer for like the next few albums that they had done. That was definitely the first group that was established on a major record label, you know, that I produced for.
But that's got to be kind of big, right? When you talk about Dilla, is like, you know, getting when they're starting to look for other production, Dilla was doing all their production before, and you're like, well, who's gonna fill those shoes? Which, you know,
I guess it was kind of crazy, because I didn't really, maybe I was too young to even see or notice like that type of pressure at the moment, because I was around, I had to be about 18, 19 when I first met them dudes. So, I didn't really understand the magnitude. I mean, I was already a huge fan of them.
Right.
And of course, Dilla, like, he was already my favorite producer before I even met any of them dudes. So yeah, I was excited just for that. But I didn't even think about like the magnitude of like coming in after, you know, me being kind of somewhat of an amateur producer, still kind of learning, but still clearly had some that they liked at the time. But, and him being such an experienced producer and such a just like ahead of his time type of producer, like, I didn't even think about it in that way.
Right. Probably better that you did, right?
Yeah,
sometimes,
yeah,
like, don't even let it get in your head. Just do your thing, man.
For real, man.
So in terms of music that you produce with Slum, again, to go back to some of those roots, man, what is something that you created with Slum Village that you're really proud of, or you think, oh, man, that was a joint?
Probably the song they created called Reunion. That joint was special because that was a song that Jay Dilla actually jumped on and rapped on.
Yo, L and 10 killing them, 3 killing them. You thought we broke up and we was just reassembling. Ladies and gentlemen, you bear witness in the villa on some classics. Y'all ish bands and limbs. Who let the dogs out and let Dilla in? Or with this is your lost Gilligan. Sound similar, I'm not feeling them. Get the balls like Venus and Wimbledon.
Getting that, like, nod from him, you know what I'm saying? That, like, yo, what you're doing is clearly, you know, something I respect. You know, that was kind of all I needed. You know what I'm saying? So having not only Slum, but having Dilla jump on a record that I produced was big for me personally, because you got one of your favorites acknowledging your work. And then, you know, him, he used to come up to the studio every now and again. So we crossed paths and met a handful of times, and him just like acknowledging me literally and like through that record was, yeah, that's all I need. I think the main thing I take from that time is just the pressure that kind of came later, in the sense of like realizing, because you got to think, Dilla was still giving them beats, even though he wasn't like in the group no more. It was still, his production was still around. You had YG, you had Young RJ, you had Kareem Riggins, you had DJ Dez. Like, you had still a lot of producers that was super talented. So I just remember the competitive, friendly competitive nature of the inner, like the vibe in the studio, like going to the studio, hear a beat from Young RJ, like, oh, that's crazy, make you want to go. I come play a beat, maybe it made somebody, I hear some YG make, you know. So it was kind of that dynamic of just like sharpening, everybody sharpening each other's swords creatively. And I think that really helped me moving forward after the Slum experience, of like keeping that same mentality of like just trying to progress, trying to get better, and, you know, grow, right, as an artist. So yeah.
I know what I think of initially when you first jumped on the scene, where I was like, oh, Black Milk, definitely got to pay attention to that guy. Yeah. In terms of his work. But yeah, for yeah. you, what do you think was the big launching point for you after Slum Village?
I don't know, because each album was kind of different. So I put out a mixtape called Sound of the City, like around the time like I was going to do my own thing outside of Slum. And that really caught a buzz, which led me to a deal with this New York independent label, Fat Beats, which led me to my first official solo project, which was called Popular Demand.
So I say what up to the world, still rocking in advance. Black Milk, people's choice, most popular demand. I have everyone like, damn, goddamn that, against Black back once again.
And man, that was just a crazy time, because, like I say, when I look back at it, I didn't realize how fortunate I was, in terms of like, I was doing something that wasn't like the norm for every rap artist, you know what I'm saying? Just curating a fan base and just getting a certain amount of attention and love for what I was doing. So I didn't really notice at the time that's what was happening. But yeah, I just remember like just that time being great, and like just making music for not just the love, but just doing what I wanted to do creatively. And after that, that's when you start thinking and being a little more in your head, because when you start getting a little bit of accolades or criticism or whatever, you know what I'm saying? You start thinking a little more about, or paying attention a little more to what you're doing. So, but yeah, those first couple albums, Popular Demand, Tronic, man, that whole run was kind of, you know, crazy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
it was crazy. Like, sometimes I fiend for like I wish I could bring some of that, just like, I don't know if naive is the word, but naive like type of energy, in terms of just like, I'm not thinking about it, I'm just creating and just right. living, you know what I'm saying, and just pushing through. And yeah.
I think sometimes when I listen to music, or even with artists, right, you know, there's some artists who are in there for the show, which is fine. There's some who are like, hey, I want to attain this station in life, and then there are some who are just like, I love making beats, I love just being in the studio. You know what I'm saying? And when I think of Popular Demand, of course, which was getting a lot of love on places like OK Player and the message boards and stuff, and then Tronic Album of the Year, as you mentioned, that kind of trio, I felt a lot of that from the beats that you were coming through. It was like a lot of joy, love, and some of the stuff that was happening there.
That was a time where I was really trying to, I guess, put something out there in the world that I wanted to listen to, in terms of, you know, something maybe I was looking for as just a music fan, and decided like, I'ma just make it as a music artist, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'ma just make the type of stuff I want to hear, or the type of, you know, the void I feel like needs to be filled. And that's what I kind of did, like, you know what I'm saying? And it really was no rules, you know what I'm saying? And it wasn't any overthinking compared to like when I look at, you know, as time goes on as an artist, after those moments, like, more thinking becomes involved, you know what I'm saying, in terms of just life stuff, you know, comes up and just, you know, it just, things change. It never stays the same in terms of your early days as an artist when it's raw. You know, most of the things is raw, and it's just like raw feeling when you're not really caring about it. You know what I'm saying? Right. I actually can't listen to a lot of that early stuff.
But, oh, really?
Huh? Yeah, it's like, you know, I kind of, you know, I think a lot of artists feel that way, though. They cringe at a lot of their earlier work because they can hear all the imperfections.
Yes.
That probably the fans love about, you know, right. What I'm saying? But it's like, I can't hear that stuff.
You are absolutely right. This is something I've noticed, too, because I'll think back to some of my favorite songs, and I get an artist, and I'm like, hey, tell me about this. And you can just hear me like, but I'm not trying to listen to that right now.
But
man,
I understand that. The energy that's in the music, you know what I'm saying? Maybe on a technical level, it wasn't, you know, this whole technical thing, but, and that's how you're listening to it as an artist, but the energy that was there was so raw, it makes, you know, and people, you know, they remember where they were when they first experienced, so it's a lot of that too, you know, people have memories attached to a lot of the early music that artists do,
Have you seen a change in how you create music from when you started out to where you are now? And can you tell me what change you see the most in that progression?
I would say on a production side, I still kind of have somewhat of the same approach in terms of, like, you know, I'm still using the drum machine. I've still got the MPC. Like, a lot of my tools are still the same. I still have, you know, I'm working with a lot of musicians. You know, I take what the musicians play at the studio and bring it back to, you know, to my workstation and manipulate it and do all kind of crazy stuff. I think the main thing that's changed, though, is like my content, like the things I talk about, you know what I'm saying? I find that to be the most, you know, the thing where I sit down and try to figure out, like, okay, what am I about to talk about? You know what I'm saying? Where am I at right now in this moment? You know what I'm saying? In time, what am I feeling? What do I see other people dealing with, you know what I'm saying? What's the climate of the social issues that's going on in the world? What's the climate of, you know, stuff like that, you know what I'm saying? Stuff that's going on in my city, you know what I'm saying? So, like, I think that's the most changed, the songwriting part. Like, where before, like in the early days, I used to love to just, because a lot of the people I looked up to was kind of like this, but I just rapped about rap a lot of the earth, which is great. I still love that type of stuff. Like, I still love certain artists that just, like, get in the booth and just rap. I low-key kind of envy them sometimes, too. Like, dang, man, you just get in there and just, like, say crazy, clever, witty, lines and just dope. But for me personally, like, I kind of grew out of that around Album of the Year, my third album. I found myself kind of, like, you know, because I went through some stuff with my manager and, like, him getting ill and just some, it was a lot of crazy personal stuff that was going on at that time that I started writing about it. And then I started really digging my heels into it, like, albums after that, where, like, once I seeing people, like, reacting, like, man, I relate to this song, I relate to that song. And I start seeing, like, oh, okay, on a personal level, like, I'm getting it's more than just, oh, that beat is dope. That beat is crazy, or that rap was crazy, or those, you know, that was so clever how you said, like, when you start really resonating with people on, like, a personal level, I don't know, it's hard for me to not write with some level of substance. You know, every song don't have to be conceptual, but, like, just something there, you know what I'm saying? Something you can kind of relate to or feel. So I think that's the main thing that's changed since the early days.
Your new album, Everybody Good, dropped recently in 2023. One track I definitely got to get into, that No Wish track with Fonte and Raphael Sadiq. One of the reasons why is because my show Soul Saturday. So, you know, we focus on soul, R&B, funk, electronica, jazz influences, but we love our hip hop too. We got to gateway some people. But a lot of cats listening, they're going to be familiar with Raphael Sadiq, of course, Tony. They actually like Lucy Pearl.
Yeah, no, Album slept on low key.
It really was. You know, I was like, I was talking, someone did a super group segment on our station, and I was like, man, you don't really hear any super groups in the world like hip hop R&B music, but that Lucy Pearl, man.
I slept on it. I actually went back and was like, man, I was tripping. This album kind of crazy.
Right? Like, yeah. Different music for different time. I think that's true with Fonte, too, if we think about his progression from Lil Brother all the way to Foreign Exchange and stuff. But I just mentioned, I know people who are listening to this show are going to, and listening to WDET will be familiar with those two. How you get them in on that track? Why were they the people? And tell me just a little bit about what you're trying to accomplish with No Wish.
I had no plans on, no idea Sadiq would even end up on this album. I had my man Penn up to link up, and he was like, I'm going to the studio with Sadiq. You come through, blah, blah, blah. So went over there, kicked it with him, and I was playing him a lot of the album. He was playing me a whole bunch of just unreleased music, production, crazy stuff. He had played that particular track. He was like, yeah, man, I hear somebody rapping on it like this and that, da, da, da. And then I was just like, yo, I could do that. You know what I'm saying? Like, right. like I could do that. I could figure something out. And I feel like he was kind of insinuating, you know, what I could do on it. Anyway, so he gave me the track. You know, I sat with it, lived with it. Finally had put something to it.
Yeah, didn't have to wish at all. Life hits you hard back against the wall. Ain't no wishing on a star. We was adolescents wishing for phone calls to roll through. Have to be the one to always keep it together like stitches. My shoulders where my chip is. My soul's where I go for riches. Cause ain't no genie in the bottle taking wishes.
Thought like, man, I feel like I want somebody else on this second verse. And Fonte ended up being the person that I thought about. He came with a verse that was so crazy. And I had no idea, you know, I was just expecting him to just go in there and like kick a little cool, you know, dope little Fonte 16, but he went for 40 bars, man. And, you know, his verse was like so personal about something he was going through at the time, to the point where I hit him up. I'm like, man, it's crazy. Like, why didn't you say this for your own stuff? And he was like, man, you know, I'm the type of writer that wherever I'm dealing with in the moment, whatever beat that's in front of me, I have to get it out. Like, that's what I'm gonna get out. So you just caught me at a time where that was where I was at, you know what I'm saying? And he and that's the type of verse he wrote. So when you listen to the song, you would definitely hear the content of his verse and what I'm talking about, you know what I'm saying? And like, be like, it's a heavy verse.
Yo, I was 6 years old. She was a neighbor who said, come here and do me a favor. A kiss I gave her, lips filled with the artificial flavors of candy that we shared. Cherry annihilators made our tongues red, but so many things were unsaid, cause if my mama found out, she would annihilate us. Confused and aroused by her misbehavior, no one to talk, nowhere to turn, so I put pen to paper. How can a bad touch feel good? How do we make amends when we use one another? Call me a friend, then abuse one another. Not powerless, the cowardice of you. Cause to leave me all alone with new feelings I'm confronted with, was minding my own, and I ain't asked for none of this. But with some acknowledgement, I could've got in front of it, to keep my wife and kids from bearing the brunt of it. There's gotta be a path to healing and revealing all the feelings of shame that's been dividing me in half. Anxiety on overdrive, reminders of the past. I'm shook, scared to look, worried the prodigy in half. All I wanted was my people to be proud of me and ask every once in a while, how you doing, for some follow through.
It was crazy to see. When the song came, when the album came out, that was like the song a lot of people gravitated to. And his verse, really, people was able to relate. You know what I'm saying? A lot of people was able to relate to that verse. So, yeah, man, that's kind of how that song came about. And I'm glad it ended up, like, if I never called my friend at that moment, who, like, that record probably would have never been created. But yeah.
Yeah, 1, 2, yeah. On everything I love, every day and night. Tomorrow and today ain't gon' be alike. Yeah, I swear to God, yo, I swear it be alright. Yeah, today and tomorrow they won't look alike. No, they hold you down. I took a flight. Yeah, today and tomorrow they won't look alike. No, today and tomorrow ain't gon' look alike. Yeah, today and tomorrow ain't gon' look alike.
It is like a flow to the album. I really think, man, this is one of those projects where you just hit play and kind of let it ride. 40 minutes.
Well, I did that, Black Milk, and I'm happy I did, because the thing that kept coming back to me was, I thought the inspiration for the album might have been that you got beamed up from a starship in the outer space or something, because the production to me sounded like, but one of the guys I was thinking of was Dexter Wansel when I was listening to it
crazy.
A little bit. So
that's kind of, man, you know what? I let you in on a secret that's clearly not about to be a secret if I'm about to say it on air, but Like, man, when I was going into the album, one of the people I had in mind, one of the albums I had in mind, Tame Impala Currents. Kevin Parker, he's been one of my favorite artists for the last 6-7 years, you know what I'm saying, even before Currents. But I remember when Currents came out, and that album was like my favorite album for some years, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
I just relate to him as a producer, even though he does like more indie and pop music, he's a one-man band, you know what I'm saying? And like, so like I categorize it as like original, like, dang, man, this feel like just something else, you know what I'm saying? So it was in the back of my mind a lot, like, what if Kevin Parker like grew up on 7 Mile or something? What would that sound like? You know what I'm
right,
saying?
Yeah.
Like, if you go like that, that's gonna be my version, the ghetto version of like Currents. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So,
so
when you hear a lot of the synths and like spacey sounds, a little bit of that. Now I ain't gonna say all of it, but a little bit of that is like Tame Impala influenced, and but like my crazy version. I have one line in the song, Is It Just Me, where I kind of say something to the effect about looking at my pops, trying to avoid some of the ways, you know what I'm saying, that I looked up, some of the behavior and some of the things he had or characteristics he had, me trying to avoid them, and then getting older and finding out I had some of the same characteristics. Like, like, damn, okay, it's just in my DNA, I guess.
Sat in the room talking to pops, some of his ways never would change. Thought I would never, thought I'd do better. Then I became some of the same under the flame. Don't melt when the fire's felt. Had to let go, got a little older. Could it just be, is it just me?
So it's like little things like that where it's just quick little moments and verses where I just have these thoughts of like of things I just think about, and I think a lot of people think about, and of course being a person that's black think about, then black male thinking about, like, so it's like it's kind of layered. So I was trying to think, kind of cover a nice amount of ground on all of those things.
From Detroit. How does Detroit impact your music influences and the stuff that you do?
It's something about the aesthetic of the city. It's hard to put into words, but I feel it through the music when I listen to Dilla stuff. Of course, like the techno stuff, a lot of the hip hop stuff, the production, like it just feels like it sounds like what the city looks like. You know what I'm saying? So I feel like not only just the aesthetic, but like, you know, the underdog attitude, I feel like a lot of us have, feeling like we always being overlooked and we gotta go 10 times extra hard, you know, in our skill set or whatever we do to be seen, you know what I'm saying? So to this day, I still have that attitude. So I think that's when you hear my music, you could kind of feel that either sense of urgency or just like, it seems like he's trying to do something that's going to impress on a certain level, like, because it's just I feel like being a Detroiter, that's just what we do. But we also know how to like do our thing in an effortless way, you know. So when people say like, man, you do this and you do that, like, man, you so good at blah blah blah, but to me it's just like it might look effortless, but it's like, nah, man, it's a lot of years that been, and it might actually hurt me in some ways that I'm so like with my head down and just so about the art, you know, but that's just how we are as Detroiters, man. We're really about the art. So I feel like when you hear the music, it reflects that, like you hearing a person that's like, he's really serious about what he's doing. And he comes from a community and a community of artists that are also serious about what they're doing. So yeah.
Is there any question that I should have asked you that I forgot to ask you about?
Only thing I can say is like, yo, go listen to the new music. You
gotta
go listen to the new album. If you get introduced to me for the first time, like, you know, go dig into the catalog. You know, I got a lot. I got a lot of music, a lot of collabs that I've done with people, whether it's from the city or outside of the city. Like, it's a lot of sounds. I represent just a range of different sounds of music, you know, but I just do it kind of in a hip-hop format. So, yeah, man, go listen to the music. Listen to the new album for my vinyl heads. You know, we got physicals coming, you know, you could go get that on Bandcamp, check out my Bandcamp right now, Black Milk Bandcamp, vinyls. Anybody still listen to CDs, CDs there too.
Yeah.
But, so yeah, and a lot of just vinyl for a lot of my catalog is out there on my personal Bandcamp page.
Right.
But so yeah, man, just go check out the music and you know, if you like what you hear, you know, hop on the Instagram and follow me, man, and keep up with me. I got maybe some shows probably coming up soon. I'm trying to figure that part out. I really want to put together like a really dope set for this new music.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So yeah, so yeah. Check
that,
out.
That is one thing I want to make sure people know. You said find you on Instagram, but for people who do want to get in touch with you, learn more about your music and keep up with what you're up to, what's the specific page or how can they best
Black
find you?
_milk. Black_milk. That's the page. You can check. That's my Twitter handle and IG handle. So yeah.
And this will be my last one. It's just because you mentioned it, though. There are going to be people, again, the listener base, you know, there's a lot of jazz head, a lot of R&B heads. You do the hip hop thing cold. But for people who, you know, might that gateway into getting the Black Milk, what would you recommend they pick up? Because you said go back in the catalog.
Okay.
What should they check out?
That's actually a great question. For the jazz heads, I have an instrumental project that I did with Nat Turner. It's Black Milk and Nat Turner.
Mm.
We did a project called The Rebellion Sessions. That's on streaming platforms. You can check that out. That's more of a, like, it's all live music, no vocals, just all instrumental stuff. I got a couple things with Robert Glasper for my jazz heads. Me and him did a record on one of my projects called No Poison, No Paradise. For my electronic heads, go check out Tronic. Go check out Tronic. That's a little more of an upbeat, you know, electronic vibe. For my hip hop heads, you know, you can check out all of it.
Yeah, like,
I got a little bit of something for all that. So yeah, man. I got a nice range. And for my indie, maybe alternative heads, check out the new one. I feel like this was my version of trying to incorporate some of those melodics with, you know, hip hop, but in a hip hop kind of, you know, context. So yeah.
Black Milk, it's been a pleasure, man.
Man,
thanks for joining
you.
Us on WGT.
Appreciate it. That was great. Thank you.
On everything I love, any day and night. Tomorrow and today ain't gon' be alike. Yeah, I swear to God, yo, I swear it be alright. Yeah, today and tomorrow they won't look alike. No, they hold you down. I took a flight. Yeah, today and tomorrow they won't look alike. No, today and tomorrow ain't gon' look alike. Yeah, today and tomorrow ain't gon' look alike.
You can find out more about what Black Milk is up to on his Instagram or Twitter page, Black_Milk. I'm Nick Austin, and for more interviews like these, check out the Soul Saturday webpage at WDET.org and catch us live every Saturday night right here on 101.9 WDET.